Wendy, welcome to the John Covey podcast. This is episode 82.
82?
82.
You don't know 82 people.
Clearly I do.
Clearly you do.
So that is good. It's really good. There's been some great past guests. There's some wonderful future ones. And obviously we've got you. So the world is good. Absolutely wonderful. Right, so when do you help charities and not-for-profit organisations save and raise money?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
That's what I do. So, I've only been really niched and focusing on this probably since the middle of last year. I had an accident which really put me at home and I couldn't get out and about as much. So I had to do quite a bit of the brokerage side of my business, which was looking at the costs, finding out if I could help to get them better costs in better contracts that were compliant and not ripping them off. So I was doing that for all types of organisations, whether that be schools, GP practices, charities, and the social enterprise element kept on coming up. And I felt that I was adding more value where there was a sort of a lack of a lack of understanding or a lack of time, or for not-for-profits, I'm generally dealing with people who are accidental business owners, people who never really wanted to go into business but just wanted to do a good thing. Me helping them to do that good thing properly and compliantly seems to sort of float my boat, really. And this is what I decided on. So I now...
Why does it float your boat?
Why does it float my boat? It does give me that feeling of really helping where help is required. You know, John, that you're in business and you think you've got the best thing since sliced bread to offer somebody, and they don't need it. And you sort of go, oh, okay, fine. And you walk away a little bit sort of dumbfounded as to, you know, you want it more than they do. Whereas a lot of the clients that I get into, I must say, sort of not 100%, but a lot of the good causes that I speak to, as soon as I say what I can do for them, how I can help them, they absolutely are up for it. So there's obviously this big gap of them not being supported. And that's what floats my boat, really, that I can immediately plug that gap for them and make them more commercial, make them more savvy without them losing that heart of being a good cause. So they give me the business stuff to do and they carry on doing the wonderful stuff that they do.
Sure. Exciting times.
It is exciting times because I'm learning new stuff. I've decided that I'm going to I am already offering low-level bid writing help for them so that they can get their first chunk of money, and then I can introduce these good causes then to use that chunk of money to make bigger chunks of money through my introductions to bid writers who can get the really nice, big, juicy stuff and the tenders and all those big chunks of money that then change the whole vision of the organization and what they can deliver. So I can do the get them on the journey, if you like, to changing what they're currently at. I speak to charity owners, not for profits, and they've been running their charities for 5-6 years and they've not taken a penny out of it.
Right.
Which is, you know, scandalous, really. All the effort that they put into it. But as I say, they're accidental business owners. They're not necessarily wanting to get paid themselves for doing it.
Sure.
But they probably deserve paying for what they do massively.
Yeah.
But what happens is that obviously when you're not being paid for something and you're trying to keep the walls from the door and the mortgage paid, and you can lose a bit of passion for what you're trying to deliver, and that's just a shame, really. So for me to be able to give them a chunk of money to set them on the road for actually undertaking what they want to do full time and actually earn a living out of it, as well as you know, do it, is great if they want to do that.
Sure.
I'm not sure that all of them do want to do that.
Okay.
But I'm finding that out. Some of them I'm coming across thinking, this is just too overwhelming for you. This is too much like a real business now, isn't it? And you know, not everybody wants to, as you know, be what success to me and you might, you know, just be pottering along with $5,000 in the bank for a small charity. That's all they want. But if they want the vision, then, you know, and they ask for it, then be careful what you ask for, because we'll deliver it. And then you've got to decide what you're going to do.
And it didn't really start there for you, did it, either? Because I mean, if we do go back, you spent 16 years of your life in the recruitment world.
Yes, I did. I came to Sheffield in 1989, at very short notice. I wanted to come to uni, but I had a dad to look after. Once he found out that I wasn't going to uni because I was using him as an excuse, he literally kicked me up the arse and kicked me out and said, go to uni. So that's what I did. And I just got on a course. I got on an IT course just to get me into the polytechnic, as it was then.
Yes.
Polytechnic. And I did a year, and obviously IT wasn't the thing for me. So I then transferred onto a business studies course. And because of my background, I'd worked 3 years since leaving school at 16. I was able to skip the first year. So I came out of that. And really, I was none the wiser as to what I wanted to do for a job. And I was 21, and I still didn't know. So bless these poor kids who have to take their options at 13, 14, and they're getting asked, what do you want to do with your life? It's like, you know, sometimes I still don't want to know what I want to do with my life. So it's hard, isn't it, to make these choices? But I fell into, quite literally, recruitment. I'd done finance work. I'd done HR as my chosen specialism on my degree. So I ended up going into recruitment, which is nothing to do with either, to be honest. But I did work for Hayes. That was some accountancy personnel at the time. That was how it was branded. And it was the market leader. It was the FTSE 100. And there was me in corporate world, slung in, green as little tomatoes, bless me. And, you know, had no real understanding of the business world at that stage, even though I'd, you know, done my degree. But actually working in it is very, very different at that level. But yes, I stayed around, and I was quite resilient to the culture of recruitment. Is very hard and fast and competitive and long hours, and can be quite backbiting. So I had to grow a thick skin. But I did that, and I did that for 16 years. And a lot of the work I did do was at the time around the third sector charities, not for profit. So that's, I suppose, now where I've sort of fed that from.
Sure.
And what I am doing is matching my clients with their suppliers rather than candidates.
Yeah.
But I do have that background to offer in HR and people management and looking after their staff. Because if you look after your staff, they'll look after your service users. So I'm a big advocate of that. So yeah, recruitment was my bag, but it's a completely different industry now since Tinternet came in. Even, you know, the elements of confidentiality, somebody's job searching, they can do that on job boards now, and they don't need necessarily the consultancy that they used to have in recruitment consultancies. It's a bit more sort of bums on seats and passing CVs around, but, you know, the recession of 2008, really sort of put them to bed, really, which is a shame. But yeah, so I got recession came, and I wasn't very well, and it was all a bit of a nightmare, and I ended up out of recruitment. It certainly wasn't the place that I should be with me being so unwell.
What was the unwellness? What I mean, like,
Unwellness. I've always had a dodgy back. I was diagnosed with degenerative discs disease when I was 20, actually. I've had a lot of problem with back surgery, fusing of discs, all that type of stuff, which has given me sort of permanent sciatica and nerve problems in my legs and my arms. But it was something else in 2008. I did lose my dad in that year as well, which didn't really help, but there was all sorts of different symptoms going on as well and I was past pillar to post around the NHS. Bless my GP, he genuinely did want to help, but it sort of came down to, right, what's going on? There's so much going on. And eventually I was diagnosed with an autoimmune condition, which it makes my blood too sticky.
Right.
And I had this stroke episode. So that's when they decided that that's what it was. And they gave me a couple of other labels like lupus and Sjogren's syndrome, which don't really crop up that much. It's mainly the sticky blood thing. And I've just received a new label of fibromyalgia as well, just on top, just to put the cherry on the cake. Sure, sure. I'll have another syndrome. I haven't had one for a bit, so I'll have one of them. So yeah, fibromyalgia. So
are you still smiling?
Yeah. Well, the DWP, I went in and they interviewed me and they were going to give me some disability living allowance, you know, just to make it a bit easier for trying around the car and whatever. And they just gave me a letter that says, we'll never work again, and a big stamp on it. And I was like, oh, that's upsetting when you're 38 and you've got two kids and a mortgage to pay. So I had to do something about it. And what I did was learn to be self-employed, because I wouldn't have employed me at the time. From various times of day, I just wasn't in a position to do anything, really. So I had to pick and choose what I was doing and be my own boss. Sure. And not have to report into, you know, a boss and explain why I wasn't feeling so good, but, you know, in 2 hours' time, I'd be fine again. Yeah. So that's the sort of transient symptoms that you get with these type of things. So, yeah, I picked up multi-level marketing because they were low cost and there was a big element of personal development involved in them, which, you know, first business that I picked up was Clean Easy, putting those catalogues through doors, which was amazing. I put my cap on and went off around my local estate. There's 1,008 houses on our local estate. I can tell you everyone, and I can tell you everyone who's got a dog. And I can tell you every low letterbox where there's a Jack Russell sitting the other side of it, waiting to take your fingers off.
Yes.
Anyway, all those skills that you learn going door to door, they're amazing.
Incredible.
It got some weight off me as well, walking around delivering Clean Easy catalogues. So yeah, it did well, but it grew so much that it just became a delivery business, really, which isn't what I'd really signed up for. So I put that to bed and I looked at another franchise option, again low cost because I hadn't got money in the bank, and I went for an offers website, a website that was meant to, you know, have a bit of branding behind it. This one didn't, so I had to do all that as well. And it was low cost advertising to the local shop owners and that sort of stuff, for, you know, 10% off your haircut or 5p off a lamb chop or whatever in the local butchers. And yeah, it was great. Again, taught me lots and lots of skills about keeping records and databases and that type of thing, becoming self-employed. But it was recession time and people stopped advertising. So I lost a bit of money on that one, but learned masses. So you move on. I picked up Utility Warehouse as multi-level marketing business and thought, well, I'll do some research work as well, which will give me a steady wage. And I went back to social, to interviewing, using my interviewing skills from recruitment days. And I worked for a social research business, going into people's homes, mainly old folk who are lovely to talk to, sitting up a cup of tea with. And they were all sort of government surveys, health surveys, NHS surveys. So I did the crime survey for England and Wales, which was quite telling. But yeah, I enjoyed that and it got me out and about and gave me a steady wage, but I had to develop a business, really. And Utility Warehouse was a slow burn at that stage. It's far easier to earn a wage out of it these days, but it was a much slower burn. It was nearly all residual income, which, you know, has to build up over time. Whilst networking, which I did huge amounts of when I became self-employed because I like it, I was being asked about commercial brokerage and can you do my gas for my business and can you do my telephones? So I put together a sort of brokerage business of my own called Let's Save, and it was literally, right, let's have a look at your costs. And I built up my connections through from my networking, and would suggest alternatives by looking at people's bills for them. And then, as we say, it sort of came to the middle of last year when I was sat at home, not able to drive for a few months. So I sort of thought, right, let's do what I really love doing and what makes me the most money and what, you know, I can add the most value to. And it came down to doing brokerage, but also looking into helping them raise money as well. And obviously I can fall back on a lot of marketing skills that I've got, a lot of social media, press releases, that type of stuff that I can hand over and guide small charities and community interest companies. And if, you know, I'm very aware of my limits, once I get to my limits, then I can then point them in the direction of a specialist marketer or PR person or HR person. I don't sort of dabble with or try and tell people, you know, what the law is. I will hand it over to a person who does that for a living. So I tend to go in, fact find, find out what exactly they're looking for, whether it's reduction of costs or making sure that they're on the right track with their marketing or have got sufficient records for their employees or their systems are correct or that they could just do with a little bit of funding to get them to that next level. So that's why I do.
Well, I think you've answered like every single one of my questions before I asked it there.
You could have just, yeah.
You can, you just, you were on a roll. I didn't want to interrupt you. You were just going for it. So I'm like, yeah, I'm
no.
Just,
no, just. Don't interrupt me.
And just listen.
Sorry, was this meant to be a conversation? Are you even here? Sorry.
I'm just listening. I'm just listening.
Okay.
Cool. Okay. So, I mean, let's just dial back a little bit then, and let's go back to Print and Offer. So the franchise that you bought into.
Mm.
So you bought into this. You went into that for like, what, a year and a half?
Yeah, it's tough. Really tough.
Yeah, what was tough about it?
The fact that it was low cost, high volume stuff. Mm. So to get, you know, really it needed 100 advertisers at any one time, and it needed promoting to the local community through banners and you know, stalls and leaflets, and it was just a never-ending money pit, in all honesty, because that kind of stuff takes money. And like you say, in 18 months I did do the door-to-door with the leaflets, I did do the banners, it did cost me a fortune going into the centre of, you know, Crystal Peaks and shouting about it. And people need to see these things 7 or 8 times before they really take notice of it. So I kept on showing them, but it was really tough. And the offers for the clients were something like, I can't remember whether it was 12 quid or 20 quid to have on for a month, your offer. So I had to have loads on. That was the model.
What did you learn from it then? What was like the kind of biggest business takeaway in terms of?
I suppose with that one was to really research what I was buying into. And when I sort of got a solicitor through my networking to actually look at the agreement that I'd signed, it was very much, you know, I was actually just buying a website with a back end to it that I was inputting. So I think it's just awareness. I think it's just using your connections to leverage your knowledge. Because, you know, I still haven't got knowledge of exactly what a good legal agreement is. Technically, I would always go and get a solicitor to absolutely go and rubber stamp it for me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is using those connections rather than thinking that you can do it all yourself and bullish with it.
What was good about it? What did it teach you? What did you learn?
Oh, I mean, it was back to picking the phone up and going out of my comfort zone. I was doing lots and lots of outbound calling, to local shops, but I was researching information from the web. I was going into the local community and I was, you know, facing those fears and talking to the general public, those scary people, and telling them about my business. And it became a very personal thing. And when I did have to put it down, it didn't sit well at all. And I struggled with putting the business down. It was like a grief process when I actually decided to put it down. I actually read a book called Do It or Ditch It.
Okay.
Can't remember the author, but it is literally that, Do It or Ditch It. And I read it cover to cover in about 2-3 days and thought, shit, I've got to ditch it. And I didn't want that to be the outcome at the end of the book because I was attached to it.
What was the kind of deciding factor that made you decide to ditch it?
I was 10 grand in debt and with nowhere else to go. And I was just pouring money into it. And the forecasts were, I was getting more and more knockbacks on, look, we're just cutting down on the low cost stuff.
Sure.
So it wasn't even gaining momentum and I could see it, you know, blossoming into something that I could retrieve back my investment. It was only going to go one way, and it was only my stubbornness, really. My resilience turned into being
stubborn,
you know, bloody minded about it. And no, it's going to be fine. And I had other franchisees ringing me and saying, Wend, leave it alone, put it down. It don't work for me. It doesn't work for loads of people. No, it will work for me.
Yeah.
And I probably carried it on 6 months too far.
Sure.
But again, it was more, you know, me not wanting to let go of it and get beaten by it, I suppose. Because I'd let Cleasy go on a high. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I didn't want it to have beaten me, but it was just one of those things.
Yeah.
Just had to go through.
So the book Do It or Ditch It's by Bev James.
Okay, yeah.
So for the listeners that's watching or listening to this, we will put a link in that so you can find it on Amazon or somewhere like that as well. So I'll put a link in there as well so they can find out a little bit more about Do It or Ditch It. Might be helpful for them.
Well, yeah. I mean, I always turn to personal development when I've got a decision to make. Quite a lot. And I'm a reader. I'm not necessarily a listener. I do a bit of listening, podcasts and stuff, but it's mainly books. Old style.
Yeah.
Proper books for me.
Proper books.
Proper books. Paper.
Paper, yes. Paper. Yeah.
Paper.
So like in this journey then, so 16 years in recruitment, you've come out of recruitment, you've gone into network marketing, you've done your research, you've had a franchise, you did a little bit more in network marketing again. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, there's some incredible lessons there. What would you say is the greatest lesson that you've had from all of that?
Probably, John, that I'm incredibly bad at following somebody else's system. Okay. And I always want to change it.
Right.
And business in a box sounds fantastic. Mm-hmm. But I do get frustrated by multi-level marketing or the franchise options that I've had because I've had boundaries that I can't step over and I've had websites that I can't change and I've had, you know, the rules. and it's, oh God, my mum would turn in her grave if she thought she'd given birth to, you know, a rule breaker. That's really not how I was brought up. I was a really good girl. I found my school report from 1982. One of my sisters gave to me and I was like a real suck up. I was completely, you know, brown noser. But, you know.
What changed? What changed?
Things change. And yeah, why? I do. I have got a bit more challenging of the rules, I think, as I've got older.
Why is that?
And, well, I've probably seen stuff and I probably, you know, put a bit of confidence in my own knowledge of I do know better sometimes, and I'm always happy to learn if somebody's there to show me another way and I'll listen, but I do get quite hung up about being in control, and that's probably the other big thing that I've learned, that I am a huge control freak, which has ups and downs to it, you know. I don't easily let go of stuff, like I'm going through my outsourcing journey at the moment. I'm finding that difficult. However, you know, I'm doing that. I have to do that. That's the end of it. So, but yeah, I have learned that I am a bit of a rule breaker, and I enjoy having my own business and being able to change something overnight or within 10 minutes, not having to go to a board meeting for a board meeting to get it changed and through, and somebody else to, you know, I'll always bat it off people, you know, ideas that come up, I will go and have conversations. I've got some real good people who I would, you know, I enjoy their opinion, and I'd like to talk it through with people. You've been one of those guys through the years that I've sat down and sort of said, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And I will listen to people who I trust. But I suppose it is a case of, it is me and I have to make the decisions for my own destiny, I suppose.
Sure. So,
and I have to take that responsibility.
Let's pull that back into the present right now then. So in your business right now, let's save. You've made the decision, which is, you know, when you're breaking the rules maybe slightly, or maybe following advice, and she's decided that she's not going to be serving lots of different organizations and different business sectors, but she's going to go really niche and just go after working with charities and not for profit. I mean, how did that make, like, what was the mindset towards that? Was you scared about niching?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was scared at saying, or there being not enough business in the charity sector or the not-for-profit sector. And I was scared that I was closing the door on a lot of other things and opportunities that, you know, I could be taking part in. I also very, very scared about just being known for one thing. And if that one thing wasn't quite right, I wouldn't have a thing. But I had to, again, make that decision based on the circumstances. The circumstances were that I was trying to be everything to everybody. And our, you know, client avatar that we all talk about, I had about 28 of them. And I just didn't have the resources or the energy to have a marketing plan for every single one of them. Sure. Just didn't. And again, I feel that I was quite confused in my messaging at networking and through that marketing. So I was trying to please everybody all the time, right, rather than, you know, just talking to one audience and talking about their problems and trying to resolve those problems and show them how I can give them a solution to that. Mm-hmm. That makes it far more simple for them to understand and then engage with me. Since I've been sending those messages out, I've had far more engagement on LinkedIn, because that's my stomping ground, if you like.
That was the kind of question that I was going to ask, which you're answering.
Sorry.
No, that actually was the next question. Like, what's been the impact? What has been the result of you reaching out?
Sat watching, what's it called? What's it? The midwife program last night on the Call the Midwife. And I was planning and scheduling my social media, as I always do, on a Sunday evening. And I got a LinkedIn message from a guy who is on LinkedIn as his day job. Yeah. However, he's a trustee and is involved with a charity. And he messaged me to say, look, we need some help. Can we talk tomorrow? And we've spoken today, and yeah, I think I can help them. And he's going to get the chairman, the chairperson, the founder of the organization to make some time in a diary and have a chat with us. So I think I am now streamlined on LinkedIn. I am now connecting only with my target market.
Brilliant.
I'm not necessarily, well, I'm not sending anybody any messages on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. I'm just letting them come to me. And what I'm concentrating on is getting good content out there that relates to them.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
So that is a couple of blogs a month, a LinkedIn article, and posts that tell people stories about who I help and how I help them.
Brilliant.
And so you're that seeing, seems to be working.
You're seeing an impact from that already, so that's
brilliant. Yeah, now I've got, this is the fourth lead, because I'm making notes of where stuff's coming from, and I asked him, you know, was it just LinkedIn you saw me on, or has somebody been talking about me, or because I do get quite a number of referrals as well through networking, because I'm reasonably well known in South Yorkshire. So, and again, it's educated my referral partners that I don't want to hear about whether schools have got a problem or whether GP practices have. I only want to hear about charities. Mm-hmm. I only want to hear about not-for-profits.
Sure.
And again, I'm getting more referrals that are spot on for exactly what I'm looking for, rather than a bit of a wishy-washy, oh, somebody's gas bill is, you know, needs looking at.
Sure.
I'll always help a friend. I'll always help a business owner who's too busy to sort their own bills at home. I'll always help with that. Mm-hmm. But my bread and butter mainstay business has got to be helping charities and not-for-profits save money and raise money.
Absolutely. So like just coming back to the mindset shift that you had to go through. I mean, like, what did you do? How did you have a technique? Is there something that you did? How did you make peace with that?
I think it was, again, getting to a point of, right, okay, I've got to determine my own destiny. Nobody else is going to help me do it. If I carry on as I'm going on, researching work, okay, it earns me my salary, but it's not giving me sufficient time to concentrate on a business that has got 28 target markets. So let's go back to just doing a bit of it. And the more I started just doing a bit of it, the more it started untangling us to it could actually be quite a big bit when it's drilled down on. You know, lots of opportunities could come out of it. Sure. And that's why, you know, I've taken extra training on bid writing and so the other side of things, really, the more the consultancy side of things that I can offer. And it has surprised me how much I actually do know about running a business when you've actually got to, you know, work with somebody and you ask them the leading questions of where they want their business to go. And it's the old thing that when you're in a business, you don't necessarily understand what you're doing day to day, but have somebody else look on top of it for you. And I think that's what I had to do. I had to look at my business without and strip away the personal attachment to it. I had to detach myself from it and look at it in a business focus of, you know, how much it's earning, how much it's being marketing, and what the future of it was. And I had to do that in quite a cold way, in a quite cold-hearted way of, well, that route's not going to work, that takes too much time. So what's my low-hanging fruit? What am I good at? Who do I already know? And go from there, really.
Sure. So you mentioned about networking.
So
coming from a networking point where you've been around the block a few times.
Yeah, a few.
A few times. I mean, do you feel, firstly, networking has value?
Oh, massively. I wouldn't have a business if it wasn't for networking. You know, I started my networking journey really when I'd got print and offer. And I Googled business networking. And it came up with For Networking, which is highly SEO'd, and it's got a pretty website. And I went on there, and I dedicated to For Networking for the journey of print and offer, really. And I went back into it when I undertook Utility Warehouse, and I also went into BNI with it as well, which probably Utility Warehouse at such low upfront earnings wasn't ideal. Now it's amazing because you can earn your quick start income with Utility Warehouse, so the costs of BNI would offset that quite happily.
Sure.
But yeah, I did anything that would get me out there, really. And I found that I enjoyed it. I found that I was quite good at it. I was able to follow up. I had a bit of a system for meeting people and then at a networking and then arranging for a cup of coffee after, which I always enjoy. I took networking by the horns, if you like, and really did as much as I could and learned how to do it. I didn't do it in recruitment days, you see, because we didn't need to. Yeah. But I loved it. And I think it is, if even as a confidence builder, as a social thing, to find out your suppliers, even if you don't get a customer, but you get all of those other things.
Sure.
I think it's worth it. I would encourage anybody to do it.
What's the pitfalls?
That you can network pretty much 24/7 and not get any work done.
Right.
And you can go networking without intention of what you want back from it.
Mm.
You can go for a nice breakfast or a lunch and meet some nice people and not necessarily go out of your comfort zone and promote your business. And it's meant to be business development. And if you sit in the corner and look at your phone and speak to the host who you've known for 10 years, it ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
But there's also merit in seeing the same people every week, building rapport and trust with them. There's merit in seeing different people every week to mix it up and widen your network. So I think it is just finding what works for you and not writing it off necessarily after the first networking meeting you go to, because I would study it as a skill, as you would, you know, marketing or anything to do with your organization and your business. I would study it as a skill that you've really got to have.
Yeah.
There are things that you need to do in networking, things that you really don't need to do in networking, and just being too salesy can just put people off. But then if you're not telling people at least what you do, they'll never know. So we're always selling, but it's just a little bit more subtle. And I think it's listening to people and making those relationships rather than going in there thinking, right, who's going to be my customer today? Doing that just never works. It's having that balance and learning how it's good for you.
What's your top tip? What would you advise somebody who's looking getting networking for the first time? What advice would you give them?
Networking for the first time, I would say jump in with both feet. Go along, see if you can find out what the sort of order of play is before you go, sort of what's expected of you, and then be a bit prepared. You know, if they want you to do a 60 seconds or a 30 second pitch on what your business is, maybe, you know, have a think about it beforehand so you're a bit prepared. Make sure you've got your business cards, make sure you're positive, make sure you know where you're going and you get there on time and you're not hot and sweaty as you bounce through the doors as everybody else is talking. You know, those types of things. But the main thing is enjoy it. And if it's something that you aren't necessarily good at, you've got to make a decision to either be good at it or leave it alone and do something else.
Do it or ditch it.
If you're not enjoying it, it'll come over. Eh?
Do it or ditch it.
Yeah, do it or ditch it. Because if you're doing something that you really don't like, I spoke to people and I run Women in Business Network and I welcome visitors in and sort of say, you done much networking before? And they say, oh yeah, I hate it. And you go, what are you doing here then? You know, if you really don't like doing it, don't do it. It's a waste of your time and you won't come over as a positive person who, you know, wants to deal with other people. So go and sit behind your computer and make friends with people on LinkedIn rather than come here and bore us to tears. So you've got to play to your strengths.
Of course. So in terms of the charities that you're working with now, or the charities that you're looking to work with right now, I mean, why should a charity use your services firstly? I mean, like, what's the real value for them?
I think what I can do is sort of listen to them, find out where they're missing, and then give them strategies that perhaps they're not thinking of, one because they don't know, or two because they're a bit afraid of or they feel that they lack the resources or the skills. The main thing seems to be we could do with some more money, and we could do with, you know, having a full-time person, you know, getting paid for this. But what I can do is come in and sort of say, right, okay, well, let's have a look, let's see what we can do. So I think it's having somebody look and find out for you rather than you just be closed, because it's very busy when you're running a charity. You haven't the time necessarily to research other things or look at what is available. There's organisations about that support you with that, but they are during the daytime hours, and you might not be able to get hold of them. So it's a case of allowing me to just have a look. It costs them nothing for me to just have a look. Sit down, cup of coffee, what do they really want for their organisation? And then I can come up with some suggestions. And if it's funding, we can apply for that. And then they can decide what they want to do with that funding once they've got it. And I can direct them as to, you know, exactly what is available for them. I can also review what they have got as well. So make sure that they have got an employee handbook or contracts up to date and stuff, just to keep them on this side of the law, which is useful. You know, because you say when they set up and it's all a fantastic idea, and then suddenly they've got 20 employees, and you think, oh, right, okay. Are we doing it right? Are we paying them the right holiday pay? Because we're not quite sure. So with me, it's very much a relaxed, let's have a look at stuff, and then let's make some decisions together over their organisation, completely up to them.
Sounds good. Wendy, that's been great. Is there any questions that I've not asked you that the listeners will find great value in?
I don't know. I think I've rambled enough. I think I've got some new business cards today. Look.
Very nice.
I haven't changed the branding because I love the branding.
Yeah.
But I have changed the bits on the back. I have changed it to helping charities and not-for-profits grow and succeed.
Which is the niche that you...
And then all the bits that I do on the back. Mm-hmm. So I would... I am so passionate about the outsourcing bit as well, but I do. I did some work on Your Thrive recently on outsourcing, which was a workshop that just touched on some of the reasons, and it was great to see a variety of business owners in the room, some very new, some hadn't even properly started, and then some very experienced. And their different views of how much of their business they should outsource and how much they shouldn't, and how scared they were of letting go of stuff. So I've decided to run a workshop on outsourcing for any organisation to come to, but I'm getting Zoe to sort me out with that. But I'm also running a couple of workshops that are charity specific, one on saving money, one on raising money.
Brilliant.
And hopefully that will... They're paid workshops, but they're very low cost, and it is an ideal for charities, not-for-profits, to come along, have a look at me, see if I can help them, because it is very much a working together process. And you know, I don't necessarily want to work with everybody either. it's a work together type thing.
Fantastic. And what's next for Let's Save and Wendy? Like, what's next?
Okay. Well, month of March is looking to be incredibly busy with doing cost reviews for charities and not-for-profits that I have met, leading into consultancy to look at bid writing for them, and then to deliver sort of leadership training and reviewing of their systems and procedures. Then late in April, I'm doing my first workshop for charities, which is the saving money. And then in May, I'm going to be doing the raising money workshop. And then in June, we're going to be doing the outsourcing one. So I'm spreading those over the summer. So it's really quite a strategy really of getting out there in the next couple of months and getting in front of as many clients as I can do through social media and blogs and website and that type of stuff.
Wonderful.
But then it's bringing in the workshops just to build on that. And I'm outsourcing more and more of the stuff that was taking my time up from sitting in front of clients or doing client work. So I am working on that. I am working in progress with that.
Brilliant. So in terms of yourself, the workshops, the outsourcing workshops, the charity workshop, charitable workshops, where can people find out more about this?
My website is up and dandy. There's lots of information on there. And my website is letssave.biz, B-I-Z. So you can have a look at that. And you can see me, connect with me by all means on LinkedIn. That's where I tend to hang out the most. Mm-hmm. I put LinkedIn articles up there and I put blogs with regard to charity related issues on the website as well. There's a WordPress blog attached to my website. I go to Thrive every month, so you can catch me there. And I actually look after the Women in Business Network meeting in Sheffield, which is a lovely, vibrant, chatty meeting. But lots of business being passed around, and that's at the Leopold Hotel. It's lunchtime and it's the first Wednesday of every month. So if you fancy coming along to that, it is single category, so you have to make sure there's nobody else in the room for you to step on their toes. But if you want to come along to that, then let me know. And my telephone number is all over my website, but I'll give it you now. It's 0772 948 1010.
Absolutely wonderful. Wendy, that has been fantastic. Can you believe an hour's just gone by?
Oh, I can talk for bloody England, mate.
It's been wonderful. Wendy, thank you so much for your time. It's been absolutely, it's been wonderful, it's been insightful, and it's been an interesting journey that you've just been sharing with us. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Thank you. No, it's my pleasure.
Thank you.